You're listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang. Hey,
this is Mr. Cripples, a.k.a. the Cat Smasher.
Hey, this is John the Natural Alessio.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
Hey guys, this is the Big Frog, Jeff Curran.
Hey, this is Mac Danzig.
Hey guys, this is Jason the Athlete McDonald.
Hi, this is Ivan Salvey.
Hey everybody, this is Joe Peltier, Jay Dirksen.
Hey, it's Mark Machine Hunting here.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is Al Guapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Thank you for tuning in to Full Contact Fighter Radio. I am your host, Kelsey Moe, coming to you from Vancouver, British Columbia. And joining me now is Brendan Lear. And Brendan, I think we discussed in the last show how when I say tuning in is completely incorrect.
You're correct there, Kelsey. And yes. you have the astute internet observances as a member of the Congress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to apologize.
The show goes out from your computer through tubes, a series of tubes.
Yes, that's what I've heard. Well, at least it does here in Canada. We actually don't have any kind of optic cable or... Well, you know, today's show, Brendan, we just don't have too much time to bore the listeners with our bad humor and unfunny jokes. We really have a stacked show. We've got the IFL Commissioner, Kurt Otto, coming on the program. And then, as well, UFC lightweight Dean Thomas coming on the program, too. He's going to be fighting Clayton Guida at the upcoming Ultimate Fight Night, which takes place next Thursday, January 25th. So, we've got... pretty long discussions with both those guys because they both have lots to say, and Kurt Otto, it's going to be great to have him on the show. There's quite a few announcements from the IFL and things going on for them in 2007, so we could have easily had a show just with Kurt. And then anytime we got Dean Thomas on, De Niro, it's always a good time.
You can't ask for much more for free.
Exactly. I think that's the best way you've ever summed up an intro there, buddy. If I had like one of those applause buttons for sound effects right now, people could hear some canned applause. Outstanding job. You deserve a raise. Stay tuned. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Mixed martial arts history will be made as the International Fight League kicks off its 2007 inaugural season Friday, January 19th at the Oracle Arena. See Marie Smith's Tiger Sharks battle Marco Huas's Condor. Plus, sibling rivalry comes to life as Ken Shamrock's Lions square off against Frank Shamrock's Razor Claws. Be there Friday, January 19th, 7:30 p.m. at the Oracle Arena. For tickets, call Ticketmaster at 510-625-8497 or log on to Ticketmaster.com.
The best stuff for MMA clothing is definitely the Full Contact Fighter shop, because with FCF gear, you don't have to be a champion to dress like one. Go check it out by now. I know you've seen it, that classic FCF logo on so many great items like our classic t-shirts, tricot jackets. We've got new high-quality rash guards, plus the NXP Extreme Fight shorts, which are available in red, black, navy, or camo. Of course, don't forget about our fantastic FCF hoodies, a variety of NXP corduroy and distress wash hats, plus now open is the FCF sticker and banner shop. We've got a wide assortment of International Fight League merch, all your favorite teams there. Just head to www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. That number again is 516-676-0033.
Hey everybody, this is Joe Elterte Dirksen, and you're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and it is our privilege now to introduce the IFL's commissioner, Mr. Kurt Otto. How are you doing this afternoon, Kurt?
How are you?
I can't complain, thanks. And of course...
All right.
Kurt, so much going on with the IFL right now, and you guys got a couple big shows right around the corner. And my first question is, for those people who maybe aren't up to speed on this weekend's event in Oakland, maybe just quickly do a rundown for what fans can expect at the IFL show in Oakland this weekend.
Well, obviously this is our first show in Oakland, so you know we're really really counting on you know a good walk up as far as. Fans are concerned. I think that they would be excited to see Frank Shamrock versus Ken Shamrock and their teams and what they're going to be able to bring to the table to compete against each other. I think it's a great story. You know, it's a real story. It's not fake. These guys, you know, have had it out for each other in the past, and they're brothers. And it's going to be interesting to see how that unfolds. And then also, you know, Marco Huas's team. The Condors versus Maurice Smith's team, Tiger Sharks, and how that's going to look, you know, because they're completely two different fighting styles, completely. And then that's a nice arrangement to set up for the fight of Marco Huas versus Maurice Smith, which will be unbelievable.
And is the super fight still scheduled for Jeremy Horn this weekend?
Super fight, yeah, Nico Vitale and Jeremy Horn. That is going to be awesome because. The last time I spoke to Jeremy Horn after the fight against Matt Lindland, he really felt like he was going to retire and or at least take a nice break and kind of regroup. And I'm just very happy for him that he decided to say screw that. You know, I'm going to go compete, and I want a great opponent to compete against. I don't want, you know, what people call a tomato can. So. Mm-hmm. I want a reputable opponent that is going to give me a great fight, and Nico Vitale is that guy.
Yeah, and immediately, I mean, that's a great middleweight fight that jumps out at you, and that kind of you sort of explained part of my next question already. But you know, there was a lot of speculation that Jeremy might leave the sport, and then this announcement came about. I'm guessing that based on your guys' prior relationship, there was no kind of doubt that you and Jeremy were going to work something out for his next fight.
I mean, right at that time, after he lost to Lindland?
Right.
No, he was going to unplug, from what I was told. So, you know, this is something that I spoke to Monty Cox, and we agreed, you know, that it's just he's too young to give it up, and let's get his butt back in the ring and let's see him compete again, and that's how it happened.
Kurt, my question for you refers back to what you mentioned about the gate, and that you were hoping to have a good walk up this weekend. How much is attendance at the gate? I know it's great for the live show to have a full house, but in terms of the IFL's business model, is it very important to get great gates?
Look, at this point, guys, we're going into arenas and cities that most organizations wouldn't go to. Or would be a higher risk situation, but you know, again, Garab and my idea is to really take it to the next level and bring our organization to as many cities as possible and let the fans see our format and let them digest it and, you know, and make the decision for themselves whether they like the team format or not. I know the team format and it works because I've had six shows and I've sat ringside and it's the most exciting fights I've ever seen, and I've been to Pride, I've been to UFC and it is very, very exciting to be there live. Unfortunately, it wasn't shown in our 1 hour show, because a 1 hour show really is 44 minutes of net fights and behind the scenes stuff when you take the commercials out of it. So we weren't able to do it, and our new TV deal is going to allow us to do that, which I'll talk to you guys about in a little while. But it's awesome. I mean, our live event, you really understand the team format. There's a lot on the line. There's a lot of pride in the teams, and we're hoping the fans get behind the teams and their cities and the coaches that they love, you know, that they love to see. And it's also awesome because our show is so interactive with the fans. I mean, our teams are out there on the bench, and the warm-up mats are right out there, and the fans are high-fiving these guys after they win, and being able to, you know, approach these guys. I mean, they're human beings, and they love the fans. They love being a part of something big, and you know, it's very, very exciting for us to offer that to the fans.
And you mentioned the team format, and I wanted to ask you about that, Kurt. You know, when the IFL was first announced, I think that some people's eyebrows were raised a little bit curious about the team format. And now, in retrospect, when you look at it, with so many companies weighing into mixed martial arts, in a sense, it's great for you guys because you're unique in that
exactly
sense of the
right.
team format.
Exactly. I mean, like, it would be a mistake if we tried to directly compete with the UFC and Pride. I mean, they really have mastered what they've done. They're great at it. They make good money at it. And you know, they have very talented athletes. And you know, I feel that because we're a league and we're the only league in the world as far as mixed martial arts is concerned, that there's a little bit of a safety net there. You know, that we're competing in the world of mixed martial arts, but we're not directly competing with other organizations that are very, very powerful in this business. You saw what happens when companies like the WFA put on one show and bam, they're out. You know, and it's unfortunate because I think as much MMA as possible is great, as long as they're good fights and as long as the production value is there, then you know, I think as much MMA as possible is great. But we're also free, you know, we're on free TV. And you take the combination that we're the only league and we're on free TV and we have great up and coming athletes. You know, like I said, I've said it before, the caliber of our athletes, I would put them up against anybody. And I'm serious about that. I don't mean to sound naive, but you know, I study this business, and I know the fighters, and I know what they're capable of doing, and I believe in these guys, and the coaches do too. That's why the coaches brought these guys to the table to represent them.
Mm. Well, Kurt, that leads into my second question, and you know, people have credited at least a. Many voices in the mainstream media have credited Dana White for bringing MMA as far as it's gotten in the last 2 years. But you've, with the IFL, have realized phenomenal success. And Kelsey says you've raised a few eyebrows talking about the team concept. But from my perspective, you basically announced the concept and had almost everyone to a T in MMA. Disclaiming the concept and saying that it wouldn't work, and now you've got a phenomenal product. The shows are polished. You've surrounded yourself with basically the who's who of MMA for the last decade, and the sort of missing link was that the TV deal wasn't getting you enough exposure. So could you talk a little bit about that? I was going to ask you before you mentioned your new deal. Were you happy with your old deal? So talk a little bit about that.
Well, first of all, we were very fortunate that FSN gave us an opportunity to put on fights without even ever having a fight. I mean, who the heck does that, right? Mm-hmm. So they must have really believed in our vision and our product and our production and our team that's involved. Meaning, you know, it's not just me and Garib. It's our whole staff. It's everybody that's been working together in the same direction, getting this thing done. You know, my idea was awesome, but I'm just telling you, you got to have both oars in the water, and that's me and Garib, and then not only us, our entire staff, you guys, you know, as far as our marketing and PR, guys like Joe Favorito and Jerry Milani and Mark Selva and Joel Ehrlich and Steve Tornabene and Keith Evans and Lisa Faircloth, and I mean, listen, we can go, Marie Kamaya, we can go on and on and on about every single person in our company, and I'm telling you, I'm with these people on the phone every single day or eye to eye with them, and these people are the best in the business, and that is why we're at where we're at, because we have an unbelievable support system. Everybody wants us to work, not only our corporate side, but our athletes and our coaches. Our coaches have equity in this company, and they have a financial interest in our success, and that's the magical recipe. You know, that everybody really wants us to work because it's a great idea. And it's no longer an idea, guys. It's a reality. It's real. I mean, we've put on 6 shows in 8 months. But getting back to the FSN thing, I was so happy, you know, when we got our I don't care if we had 20 minutes of fighting. You know, the bottom line is FSN was showing our fights. And it was unfortunate that we had to edit some fights and we only were able to show, you know, some full fights, but again, it's only 44 minutes out of 1 hour. I just want to tell you guys right now, if everybody goes on www.ifl.tv, they will see our new TV deal. And that new TV deal is unbelievable. We are on a 1 hour show on FSN on a certain night during the week, and we're also on a 2 hour show on my network. Which is a major TV network. So now we're on cable TV and free TV. So that's unbelievable. That means that our 2 hour show, that means that we can put together an unbelievable package and show behind the scenes our full fights. We could show super fights. We can divvy it up however we want to do it. Now we have the flexibility and the freedom to grow and show the fans what our show, what our production really looks like on TV, because if you're not fortunate enough to see it live, then we're going to try to make the best possible scenario for you to really understand it through our TV programming.
So with 11 events scheduled this year, then people can look forward to a lot of coverage, I guess, with this new deal.
Oh yeah, they each network gave us 22 hours of programming. That's 44 hours of programming, which is just a tremendous amount of programming. And I mean, in reality, it's probably going to be more. But we're also going to do some pay-per-views, and we're also going to do some live fights.
Okay.
So, you know, internationally, this thing is just off the hook. I mean, you know, we announced some new coaches, and you're going to see those new teams get acclimated to our system, during our season. So there's going to be some additional events that we are going to be proposing to do, and you know, and get those teams acclimated too. I mean, you know, we announced Ian Freeman, you know, we announced Mario Sperry and Dan Henderson and all these guys. So it's only fair that we run some type of championship alongside to get those guys up to speed as well. And again, that's our intentions.
So what is your hope then in terms of timing? And so you would have a live event, obviously, during the week sometime or on a weekend. What would be the timing that you would hope to get that event aired on television?
Well, I mean, we did a press release. I'm not sure on the exact time, but it would be in the first quarter.
Ideally, if you have an event on a Saturday night, when would that event? When would you like to have that event on television?
Well, we would like to show it as soon as Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and possibly Friday. So, depending upon, you know, how it works out in the week. Because don't forget, guys, we have two different shows during the week. Two different networks. So we can have some fun with that, believe me.
And we've got a lot of listeners up here in Canada as well. Both Brennan and I are Canadian, and you've already got the partnership with Sportsnet up here to show your events. And we do get some feedback from Canadians, and they want to know often about what the Canadian fans can expect with as far as the IFL and its television coverage in Canada. Maybe can you
right.
Do you have any information for Canadians on that front, Kurt?
I really don't at this point. I apologize, but I know one thing. It's going to be shown in Canada, and it's going to be a longer show, and it's going to be consistent, and they're really going to be able to get their arms around this and understand the IFL and really start cheering for it and get behind it. You know, Canada is very, very important to us. First of all, I love Canada. I think it's a great place. I was up in Toronto just recently. You know, we have the Toronto Dragons up there, led by Carlos Newton, and their guys are just phenomenal athletes, and we really want to start, you know, creating some type of, you know, alliance with arenas up there, and really try to push to get it legalized in certain areas of Canada, and start having shows there. I mean, that would be our goal,
mm-hmm.
And then also providing, you know. A great TV deal up there to show fights. I mean, there's just tremendous talent coming out of Canada. You know, Boss Rudin has Christoph Sadinsky and Chris Wardeski on the Anacondas, and Carlos Newton's pissed that he lost them to Boss, but what are you going to do? And I'm excited to see them compete against the Silverbacks, you know, right out of the gate. It's going to be a very, very tough match for them. I can't wait to see Bart and Bart Palaszewski versus Chris Wardeski.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be a war.
Yeah.
That kid, oh my God. I mean, both of them. I mean, I don't know if you know Bart, but Bart is just a class act. He's a great guy. He's fun to be with. He's super talented. He's very, very diverse in fighting and mixed martial arts. And Chris, you know, he's a very unique guy, super nice guy. I mean, Boss had made a statement that if he had a son, he would want him to be Chris. You know, that says a lot coming from a guy who competes at that level, and also the guy's personality. I've spent a lot of time with Chris. He's a bunch of fun, and even though he's 19 now, right?
Yeah.
He's undefeated in our league. He just won a trip. You know, for Sandals Resorts for having a great fight, as well as all the money he made. We also gave him a trip for two, and the kid turned it on and gave it to his parents just for supporting him. I don't even think he's legally allowed to go on the trip anyways because he's so young. but he actually gave it to his parents, and I thought that just shows what kind of kid he is and what kind of heart he has, and I should stop calling him a kid.
I'm surprised you guys could get anyone to fight him because, you know, after you fought him, it looks, he's 19 years old, he looks like he's 14, and, you know, he's laying lickings on these guys that look, you know, obviously grown men, so it must have some kind of mental, there must be some kind of psychological aspect of, oh my God, what's it going to look like on television if I lose to this guy?
Can I tell you, Sean Tompkins, who is just an awesome guy, I'm sure you're familiar with Sean.
Yeah.
You know, he's responsible for training these guys along with Boss Rutan, but Sean really develops a bunch of talented people out of Canada. And he was running a seminar with Boss at one of Garib Sheamus' Wizard shows, and he had a seminar, and Mark Hominick was there, Sam Stout was there, and Chris Ordesky and Alex Schoenauer. They were helping running the seminar. And every time I have a chance, I always suit up and, you know, roll with these guys or spar with these guys. And I was fortunate enough to kind of just go tit for tat, nothing serious with Chris, but even going tit for tat with him is scary. The kid, he's very, very powerful. His kicks are very, very strong. His punches, and he's lightning fast. And he's got great ground skills too. Not many people know that, but he really does have great ground skills. And it's awesome. You know, like I've said before, I'm like a kid in a candy store. I get to roll with these guys, spar with these guys. I train at Hensel Gracie's in Manhattan. And it's awesome. I mean, it really is awesome. And I'm very, very fortunate to have that ability to get to know these guys, because they're super people and they're unbelievable athletes, and they're very humble and respectful people. And, you know, even though when you look at them get in the ring, it's a different story. But outside of the ring, they're just great people, super people.
Yeah, and you kind of, my thunder out of my question has been sort of taken out, but that's what I was going to mention. The upcoming February.
So I apologize. Sometimes I just get off on a tangent. But
No.
I just love this sport, and I love these guys.
No, I was just going to say that as far as the way Canada is being represented in the February 2nd card in Houston, you've got a couple matchups, and we already talked in length about Chris Hordesky and Bart Palowski, but as well as Krzysztof Szyszynski versus Ben Rothwell, and then, of course, the super fight with Carlos Newton versus Matt Lindland, which is a great world-class middleweight fight.
You know, Carlos versus Henzo at the last fight, at our super fight to finish out our year at the Mohegan Sun, you know, I really appreciate jiu-jitsu, and I, you know, and I think that the fans of MMA also appreciate jiu-jitsu. But those guys, when they went at each other, there was just a tremendous amount of respect for each other. So they weren't trying to tear each other's heads off. They were trying to almost just say, look, you know, I'm better than you, or I'm better than you, and I'm going to prove it here tonight, and I'm going to prove it just by setting you up like a pin and knocking you down. And you know, Carlos helped him up a couple times, and I looked at it like, you know, Henzo was like, look, if you want me to fight on my feet, then you better get your ass over here and help me up, because I'm tired. but it was a cool fight, and you know, it was a little controversial, the ending, but I reviewed the fight, you know, second by second, and you know, look, I could see why the judges scored it that way, and but it's a different ball game when Matt Lindland goes up against Carlos Newton, because there's not going to be any respect there. I can tell you that Carlos is aware of that. Matt definitely comes out. He just wants to. He really wants to hurt people. You know,
yeah.
Listen, Matt is the nicest guy in the world. But in that ring, he's a mean bastard.
Mm-hmm.
He really is. He's a mean guy, and he looks mean. He punishes you, you know. And that's just Matt. You know, he wants to win, and he wants to win fair and square. And he wants to prove to the world he's the best 85 pounder in the world. You know, people have their different opinions about that. But I know one thing. I know that when those two guys fight, Carlos is coming prepared, and I know Matt's coming prepared. And people are saying, you know, oh, man, you know, Matt's going to walk right through Carlos. I don't think so. You know, I mean, I think it's going to be a great fight. I don't think he's going to walk through him. I think that, you know, Carlos' stand-up has improved tremendously. I think Matt Lindland's stand-up is improved tremendously. But Carlos is very strong. I mean, he's got freak strength. And Matt is, it looks like he's not strong, but he's very, very strong, and his balance is incredible. I mean, he's a Greco-Roman wrestler. I think if, you know, look, Carlos can easily catch him, and everybody knows that. I mean, Carlos has got freaky skills, and Matt, you know, he could just punish you. So, look, I don't know what's going to happen. I'm excited to see it. I'm glad we're having the fight. But I can't. It's very, very difficult for me because I have to stay neutral, you know, on all these issues. But I get so excited ringside sometimes I have to, like, suppress my feelings, you know, like, oh, kick his ass, you know, kick his ass. But I can't do it, you know, and but that's going to be a cool fight because it's really forcing Carlos to fight an unbelievable opponent and really show his stuff.
Yeah. Well, we had Matt.
Show if he still has the goods.
We've had Matt on the program a couple times, and he made mention of wanting to fight Carlos. So even a few months ago, before this was officially signed, he let it be known that he would love to fight Carlos. So it's great for fans to see it coming to be.
Yeah.
Brendan, do you have anything else for Kurt?
Yeah, I just have one last question about some operational stuff to do with the IFL. And you had mentioned the controversy surrounding the Carlos Henzo decision. We haven't seen that fight, but does it give you any cause for concern moving into states that don't traditionally do big MMA shows and having to use the referees and the judges that those states are going to appoint for particular athletic commissions? Does that give you cause for concern? And the league, so that's the first thing, and the league is moving outwards internationally beyond the U.S. borders. And traditionally, especially in the last couple of years, there have been horrific problems with work visas and getting fighters cleared to come in. How are you guys going to deal with that, the inevitabilities that you're going to face with that problem as well?
Well, first of all, we have in-house counsel that works on that as far as work visas. We have immigration attorneys, and that's what they do full-time for us. So there, you know, I don't want to major in the minors. That's not my business, and I don't want to be involved in that. But all I know is that come fight night, they better be there and ready to compete. But again, we have the right people doing the, you know, right job, you know, kind of like the right tool for the right job. In reference to, you know, immigration and visas, that's handled, and it's very important. We are the International Fight League, so we have people from all around the world, from all walks of life, and you know, competing. So it's a very important arm of our business, and we take it very seriously. You know, the first question you had again was
referees in states that don't traditionally do MMA.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. You know, I know that a lot of commissions are working very, very hard to get their referees up to speed for MMA. A lot of the referees they have are from boxing backgrounds. And, you know, they might stop fights prematurely or sometimes they might let fights go too long. But they're getting better. And, you know, the sport is growing so fast at such a rapid rate. It's not their fault. They just have to get a system in place where they get people qualified to be an MMA ref. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, there's some great refs out there, and then there's some horrible refs out there, and we all know who they are. But the bottom line is they're going to get better, and they have to because now they're accountable. And the commissions are seeing to that. And I have no problem with any of the refs that have refed in our league. I actually appreciate their efforts, and I think they're all professional. I'm very proud that Lisa Faircloth in our Las Vegas office works very, very hard with the commissions, establishing who our refs are going to be with them, and making sure that there's no, you know, this guy is this guy's uncle, or this guy, you know, took this guy out to dinner last night, you know, and then that stuff happens. We have to be very, very careful because, you know, coming into cities where these teams are, you know, these coaches have relationships with some people. And you have to be very, very careful on who is showing up and reffing and judging. And we have to really cover our butts there and make sure everything is on the up and up and everything is legitimate.
And as you share those same sentiments for the judging side of things as well then?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, they go hand in hand. You know, you gotta be neutral and you gotta be fair and you can't show any favoritism. I mean, that goes without saying. But again, it all comes down to continuing education for these judges and for these refs. And again, I have not had any problem with any of our events so far with any of our judges or refs. I've had nothing but great experiences with the commissions and the staff. So. They've been very, very helpful and very supportive of the IFL, and I just, you know, want to thank them publicly for that too. You know, not to be a brown noser, but I'm being serious. I think they're very, very happy about our system. You know, our rules are safer. And, you know, I think that they realize that this is an opportunity for this sport to go to the next level and actually become a real sport.
One last thing, Kurt, before we let you go. The Marcus Ruas, Marie Smith fight is scheduled for when? The website tried to find the date, and I couldn't find it. That super fight scheduled for when?
We were thinking about having it in California, but you know, we have to rethink that, and it might happen somewhere else. But we just have to make sure that not for nothing, but these guys are 45 years old apiece.
Yeah,
you know, and all of our super fights are five 4 minute rounds. I might make an exception and go back to three rounds for those guys. But Mo's like, no. Maurice goes, I'll do five rounds. And Marco's like, no, five rounds. So,
nice.
You know, don't forget, even though these guys, you know, haven't fought, they train every day. Marco Huas teaches six classes a day and goes very hard fighting every single day, as well as Maurice Smith. Maurice Smith, when he first became a coach, was 256 pounds.
Wow.
And now he's 230. He's training every day, you know, getting it on with, you know, Reese Andy and Red Blackburn and all those guys. And it's, you know, these guys are in phenomenal shape and they're ready to compete. It's not like boxing, you know. You take a guy, you know, when, like, George Foreman came out of retirement and fought, it's a different situation for mixed martial arts, and you guys know that. So it's just a different animal altogether, and the respect level and the confidence level. And these guys weren't getting peppered for 12 rounds, you know, for 12 years straight. So it's just a different sport altogether. And the commissions, you know, need to understand that, you know, that it's a different sport and it's a different mindset. And these guys are still in phenomenal shape. So.
And foot stomps are still illegal?
I'm sorry?
Foot stomps are still legal? We can see Marcos busting out some old school foot stomping.
He has big feet, that guy. You ever see him with his shoes on?
No.
Big feet.
Yeah.
Big hands and big feet. I would not want to get foot stomped by that guy.
No.
But,
no.
Yeah, you could foot stomp.
Yeah.
You can foot stomp. But, stomping to the head, no.
Well, that's going to be an outstanding fight, and of course, this weekend in Oakland is going to be a great card as well. Kurt Otto, the commissioner of the IFL, we really appreciate you coming on the show, and best of luck here in 2007.
Thanks so much, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Kurt.
Mixed martial arts history will be made as the International Fight League continues its 2007 inaugural season, Friday, February 2nd at the Reliant Arena. See Boss Rutan's Anacondas battle Pat Miletich's Silverbacks and Antonio Inoki Sabres face off against Don Fry's Scorpion. Plus, the super fight between MMA legends Matt the Law Lindland and Carlos the Ronan Newton. Be there Friday, February 2nd, 7:30 p.m. at the Reliant Arena. For tickets, call Ticketmaster at 713-629-3700 or log on to Ticketmaster.com.
They fight for different things. For some, it's for fame. For others, it's a job. Some fighters just like to hurt people. Visit BodogFight.com and see who the fighters are and why winning matters to them. They'll have a chance to win, but only if that next round matters more than anything. View highlights, read fighter bios, watch TV episodes, or see when the next live event is. Don't miss any mixed martial arts action. BodogFight.com. Make it matter.
Full Contact Fighter.
Undefeated, no holds barred, news source of the world.
Joining Full Contact Fighter Radio now is Mr. Dinheiro, Dean Thomas. Dean, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good, man, you know. Just hanging in there.
That's good. It's kind of late down there in Florida compared to West Coast time, man.
Yeah, is it? Where you guys at anyway? I don't even know.
Well, I'm in Vancouver.
Oh, Vancouver.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something. I was in Vancouver a few months ago at the Bulldog fight, and I love that city.
Yeah.
Man, I got a lot of love for Vancouver.
See, I like to hear that.
It's kind of cold, but I got love for y'all anyway.
Yeah, it was cold. I was there. I was at those fights, too. I reported on those for Full Contact Fighter. And, you know, I'm glad to hear you say that, Dean, because Brendan here, my co-host, he always disses Vancouver, and he never gets
to see. Oh, man. Man, Brendan, I'm going to have to diss you, man, because Vancouver is hot, man. I love Vancouver. And I got to give a shout-out to my girl from Vancouver. Her name's Tara. She's cool. She's from Vancouver.
Ah, nice.
I got to tell you, Dean, that Kelsey was bemoaning the fact. You know, we had you on the show once before, and he was expecting a telephone call and actually missed the first half of the Bulldog show because he was waiting for you to hook up with him.
Yeah, it's true, Dean.
So, he was on the air, but poor Kelsey got dissed in real life.
Yeah.
Oh, my bad. Oh, my bad. Hey, Kelsey, man, I didn't know it was like that, man.
Yeah, that's cool, man. Next time around, we'll hit you up.
Man, you know, I never intentionally, I don't do that, you know, with ill will, man. You know, sometimes I get caught out there.
Well, you should come up sometime with, you should come up to Vancouver sometime with Dennis Kang, because he's originally from here, so he can show you a good time.
He is, man. I do want to come with Dennis. I love Vancouver. I want to go back out there soon. I hope Bulldog maybe puts another fight out there. I'd like
you
to go.
Yeah, you know.
Kelsey can introduce you to his chess club. He's been a big there.
Yeah.
I don't know about all that now.
Now, of course, Dean, you're going to be fighting at the upcoming Ultimate Fight Night, taking on Clayton Guida. And my first question for you, it's got to be pretty cool to be fighting in Florida, your home state.
No, man, let me tell you like this. When I first heard that there was a show coming to Florida, I called my manager and I said, listen, do whatever you got to do to get me off of that card. Keep me off that card. I did not want to fight in Florida.
Really?
It's too much. Well, you know what? You know, fighting in your backyard is cool sometimes, but, you know, at the same time, it's a lot of distractions. Everybody wants to get tickets. Everybody wants, you know, special treatment and all this and that. And it's hard for me because, it's not my responsibility to look out for everybody and make sure everybody gets in the show, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I get it all the time. Everybody's like, man, can you get me tickets? Can you help me out? And I'm just like, look, man, I got to fight, man, you know?
Yeah.
So it kind of distracts me a little bit. So I was trying to stay off the card, but, you know, they talked to Joe Silva, and Joe Silva was like, are you crazy? Shut up. You're on that card. You're fighting. And I was like, all right, man, I guess I got to. You know, you don't tell them guys no.
Yeah. Well,
so I take it when Joe Silva tells you to shut up, then you shut up. Well, no, that's been, you know, he don't tell me to my face now, you know. I am one of his illegitimate children, actually, so. Oh, yeah, that's bad about him.
Yeah, Brandon likes bringing that up.
Right.
In all seriousness, though, you're taking on Clayton Guida, who's a tough guy, more known for his wrestling, I think it's safe to say, and his takedowns, his ground abilities. Dean, you'd probably want to keep this fight standing, if preferably, or am I wrong?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's no secret that I want to keep it on the feet as long as I can. I don't know how long I'll be able to. He's pretty aggressive. I mean, he seems pretty good with his distance, so. You know, I've been trying to work on a few different things to try to keep him off me. I don't know how long I'm going to be able to do it, but, you know, I'm prepared. Mm-hmm. He's a really aggressive wrestler, and, he's tough, you know, so it's going to be a tough fight. Dean, it seems to me that he has, in his last few fights anyway, that Guida has been aggressive, bordering on reckless. So, especially getting himself in sticky situations and having to fend off some serious submissions. So, how do you prepare for a fighter who you know is going to be fairly reckless when it comes to his ground game? And is that an advantage, or is there any disadvantage for you for someone to be come at you so sort of haphazardly? No, sometimes, you know, I'm not ever, you know, my philosophy is you never fight fire with fire. You know, you fight fire with water, but sometimes you have to fight fire with fire. So, I mean, if he can get a little reckless, you know, I'm going to get a little reckless, too, to try to match him a little bit, you know, because sometimes, you know, I think I can be a little bit more reckless than him. And if he wants to play the little wild game, I might go out there and do it, too, and, you know, see who's the last man standing. So, you know, and that's kind of the good thing is that he can be a little reckless and not as sharp as some of the other guys, you know. I'd probably rather fight a guy who's reckless like that and not as sharp, because a sharp guy, you know, really put it on you if you make a mistake. But if he's reckless, you know, sometimes he's not thinking as clearly.
And who gets to play the wild man at America Top Team and emulate Guida's style? Did you tap one particular guy for that?
No. You know, honestly, I don't really have a lot of guys who can train with that are like him, you know. The guys here are pretty, you know, polished on what they do, so it's been hard finding a guy who just goes out there and swings, you know, and just, you know, has no inhibitions about what he's doing in the cage.
Dean, the last time you were on our show, you were getting ready for Rich Clemente, and you know, we didn't have you on after the win. Maybe just share your thoughts with us and the listening audience. Well, looking back on the fight, what would you give yourself as far as a grade in that fight?
I'd say, in that fight, I'd say about a B minus. I don't want to take anything away from Rich, because Rich is a tough guy, but, you know, I think that I made some mistakes in there that I probably shouldn't have. And
And, you know, to Rich's credit, he made me make those mistakes. I mean, Rich fought a good fight to the point where I pretty much hit him with the combination and kind of, you know, sucked it out of him. But Rich is a really tough guy, hard guy to fight. He actually fought a different type of fight than I had prepared for, so I was a little thrown off by that.
Yeah.
So with that said, you know, I don't think that I fought a perfect fight or even a good fight. You know, I just kind of, you know, went with it and was able to land my shots that I wanted to put them away. But, you know, like I said, a B minus at the most.
Why, you say that he didn't come at you the way you expected, from what and now I'm just recalling the fight off memory. I think he tried to stand with you for most of the beginning of the fight. Is that what you mean? Surprised you, or?
Yeah, it really did. You know, it really, really, really did. I didn't expect him to stand up as long as he did. I really thought that he would, trying to take me down a little bit more. Because, you know, I was watching a lot of his tapes, and his takedowns are phenomenal. I mean, he was swinging these guys halfway around the cage in the ring when he fought in MFC. And I'm like, you know, that was kind of the biggest thing I was concerned with, because, you know, I was going to be fighting on TV, and I had a lot of people watching.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, I don't want to get embarrassed and get thrown all over this ring. So, and I really thought he was going to do that to me, and he didn't, you know. And he didn't, and I don't even think he attempted to do it early on. I prepared for more of a fight like that, him trying to tie up with me and plant me on top of my head.
Yeah.
And, you know, Dean, Guida comes to this fight with a long sort of journeyman's reputation. He's got tons of fights. He's a tough guy, but he's got to have some of the coolest hair in all of MMA. Now, you got to tell me that you're gonna respond by busting out a Black Power fro for the fight. You've been growing it out for the last 4 months.
I wish. You know, I'd have the Black Power fro with a little pick in it, with a little fist coming out of it. You know, I was thinking about getting one of them. But I keep my hair nice and low. You know, I hope he puts that in corn, his hair in clothes, because I'm gonna have this urge to pull his hair if he wears it. You know.
See, that's another thing you could have done in Vancouver. You know, there's not a lot of long hair MMA fighters, but in Vancouver, the place is filled with hippies. You could have been tapping them out left and right and using them as your sort of long hair sparring opponent.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Yeah, well, I mean, on that line, then, what did you think of, you know, Evan Tanner, I think, had the best long hair do in MMA. He had the samurai.
He did, and he also put that thing in cornrows, too, man,
yeah.
You know, when he fought with it. So, I don't know how I'm going to deal with it with all that hair. I saw a picture of him on the internet, and he had all his, Clay had all that hair, and I'm thinking, I'm not used to fighting a guy with all his hair. It's going to get all in my mouth. You know, it's going to be, it's kind of gross.
Well, have you ever thought about this, though, Dean, you know, he's got the long hair, and his nickname is the Carpenter. Have you ever thought of, you know, how that's going to psych you out if you're a religious guy, you know, going into this sort of Jesus-esque figure across the ring from you?
You know what? I never even thought of that.
Yeah, I didn't either.
But, it's kind of like Jesus got that long hair, and he's the Carpenter. Holy shit. I never even thought of that. Oh, no. Fucking
yeah.
Jesus. Well, don't think about it too much.
Yeah.
Well, I think I'm not very religious anyway, so.
Well, I'll try to get the conversation back on track here. Brendan has a tendency, Dean, of doing that to people, getting us talking about such things as Jesus. But when you look at the rest of the card, Dean, I mean, there's some great lightweight fights. I mean, your fight with Guida, a lot of people looking forward to, and then Hermes Franca versus Spencer Fisher. That fight could be.
Yeah, I'm actually really looking forward to that fight too.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the fight that, you know, kind of bumped me off of TV. But I'm not mad for that reason. I mean, I really wanted to fight on TV, but that's going to be a great fight. I think Hermes and Spencer are really two tough guys, and they got really, really good entertaining styles. And I think it's going to be a really good fight. And I'm kind of thinking that fight is setting up for, like, probably even, I wouldn't be surprised if the winner of that fight gets a title shot, really, you know?
Yeah.
I wouldn't doubt it, you know? I think, you know,
well,
Frank
has won seven in a row now, so.
Yeah. He's been on a roll, and Spencer has, you know, always been dangerous and always has proven to be a good fighter, so it's going to be a really good fight, I think.
That's one of the comments I made to Kelsey is that you guys are going to have to go with hammer and tongs to try and get on TV. Is that an incentive for you, or is that something you have to put in the back of your mind apart from fighting Jesus?
No, I'll tell you what.
when, you know, sometimes when you're at the show, you know, you have to, you know, use different things to kind of motivate you to perform good, and getting on TV this time will probably be one of the things that's going to motivate me to perform it at the best of my ability. So I really, really, really want to fight on TV. So I'm going to do whatever I can to make that happen.
Dean, I wanted to ask...
Go ahead.
I wanted to ask you about it because last time we had you on the show, we talked about your experiences on The Ultimate Fighter, and then since that time it's been confirmed that it's going to be BJ Penn and Jens Pulver as coaches next season, and they're going to be featured lightweight. What's that like for you? I mean, you kind of see the lightweight division almost fell out of the limelight. Obviously, the UFC didn't even have it for a few years, and now it almost seems like there's this rebirth in people taking interest in not only your fights, but the history in the UFC lightweight division, which includes, of course, BJ Penn, yourself, and Jens Pulver. What's that been like for you? Do you notice people sort of talking about your previous fights more now, say, than they did a couple of years ago?
You know what? Not really, man. I'll tell you the truth, man. And it's funny you bring this up because I would expect people to really bring that up because, I mean, I fought both of those guys, you know? And I would expect people to be like, oh, yeah, you know, blah, blah, blah. But it really hasn't been like that, man. And I think that, you know, I think after I get through this fight, you know, hopefully with a nice little win, I think that it will kind of, you know, resurrect some of that conversation and put me back in the mix with those guys because, you know, I think those guys are still kind of, they've been out there kind of in the limelight when I was kind of sitting back a little bit. So, and then with the show, it kind of put me back out there, but still not as much as I'd like to be. And I think a good win for me here will spark some of that conversation about me getting back in the mix with these guys and bringing up that history. Mm-hmm. You know, who knows, man? Who knows what the producers of the show is going to do, man? You know, they brought them, you know, some of them coaches out there like Rich Franklin. Maybe they'll bring me out there, you know?
Yeah.
I would, you know, so listen, if y'all are listening, you know, I have all for the idea of going out there and training with some of them lightweight guys, man. I have no problem with that. I won't be like Rich Franklin and sit on the sideline of Mark Layman. I'll get out there and train with them guys, man. Y'all can film that shit.
Yeah.
We have to ask Dana White to stop listening to our show, actually, because he was stealing a lot of our ideas and just sort of,
Dana, come on.
Oh, really? Come on, yeah. Dana, man. You can't play drive the wit from these guys, man.
Dean, what is it like fighting someone? And like I said, your opponent is really very much a journeyman like yourself, been in the fight game a long time. Is there a different attitude, a different decorum fighting someone who you know has been in as long as you and has experienced a fighter as you?
No, you know, he's a different type of journeyman than I am. and I don't even like to think of myself as a journeyman, but I mean, I've been around a long time, but he hasn't been around that long.
Yeah.
His record's like 20-4, but he's only been fighting for a couple of years, you know? So he's amassed such a large amount of fights in just a short amount of time. I don't think he's been in with the level of competition that I have. Although he fought, you know, Gilbert Melendez, who is probably right now in the top five lightweights in the world. Josh Thompson's a tough guy, he beat him. But, other than that, I don't think he's fought, you know, the quality of guys that I fought and just have the savvy and the veteranship that I have. So, you know, but he does bring a lot to the table, so I don't really want to take nothing away from him.
Well, when you talk about level of competition, at your weight class, one of the interesting things I've noticed is that in a lot of the popular polls, American fighters don't even actually figure into many of the top 10 lists in the world.
I know it's kind of...
Do you feel like you're getting the sort of short shift there?
Yeah, I think American fighters are getting kind of shafted out of that. And I don't really understand why. There hasn't really been a lot of cross-fighting to really make that comparison. You know, it's kind of weird. You're like, Shirk... I was reading one poll and Shirk was like ranked 10th. You know, I'm like, Shirk's a UFC champion. You know what I'm saying? He's got two losses... Never at 155. He's got two losses. Once against Matt Houston and against, you know, George St. Pierre, and he's not in the, you know, he should be in the top five somewhere, you know, in the weight. And it's kind of weird that he was like barely cracked the top 10. And, you know, most of the other guys were Japanese guys that fight Pride. And it's still, I'll tell you, it's an unfair ranking because in Pride, those guys fight at 161 and UFC is 155.
Yeah.
And if you don't think it's a big difference, you know, that 6 pounds, it's a big difference with this weight. And the guys who are making 61 don't have to work as hard to make 55, and they wouldn't be the same fighter at 55. So I think the rankings are a little skewed when they just categorize everybody as a lightweight.
Well, let me ask you that then. I mean, you fought BJ Penn, and now he's confirmed that he's going down to 155, and let's say he gets past Jens. Do you see BJ having the kind of game and the skills to take out a guy like Sean Sherk?
Yeah, I do. I think BJ definitely has the ability to take out Sherk. I think BJ could beat Sherk. I think, while Sherk is very good at what he does, I'm not sure he has the skill set to beat a guy like BJ, To beat a guy like BJ, you need a very specific skill set, and I'm not sure Sherk has that to do it.
You think he could keep the fight standing, you mean? You see BJ keeping the fight standing or just submitting him, or...?
I mean, even if he were to keep it standing, even if Sherk were to take him down, I just don't see him being able to control BJ for 5 rounds,
yeah,
like he did Florian,
Yeah.
I just don't think he has that in him. I don't know. Maybe he does, but maybe he doesn't. But I just don't see it right now.
Well, do you see BJ? How do you match up BJ Penn and Jens Palmer, the rematch then, which will take place in a few months?
You can never, Jens is a total warrior, man, and I don't think Jens will beat him. It's hard to say whether Jens can beat him now. I'm not going to say I don't think he can, because I do think he can. I do think Jens can beat him.
Yeah.
I do think, Jens is always one punch away from raising his hands. But, again, BJ is just, sometimes when BJ's on, man, he's on another level, and you have to have a very specific type of game to beat him. And Jens may be able to do it, but if he doesn't, he can have a hard time with a guy like BJ, because BJ is very dangerous.
Yeah.
Dean, the last time we talked to you was right before the George St. Pierre, Matt Hughes fight. Your two friends from the reality show. What were your reflections on that fight? Were you happy to see the way that ended up? I don't really want to comment on, on whether I did a celebrate it with a dance or not after that fight. But I'll tell you, I thought that, Matt looked like, Matt was actually undersized in that fight. It was kind of weird. But what he looked like to me was, Matt didn't really respect him all that much going into that fight. And he certainly didn't respect him when he felt his power, and it paid. I think a rematch, if they get a rematch, I think Matt will do a little bit better in a rematch. Whether he wins or not, who knows, but I think he'll be a little bit more prepared, a little bit better. When Matt runs into those problems, man, he just wins for so long, and you just, forget that other people are good sometimes, and you just think you can get off of, you think you can just beat everybody just because you beat him before, or beat, the last guy, or beat the last 10 guys. And I don't think he really trained as hard as George did. So I don't think he was really ready for George at the time. I think if they fight again, it'll be a different fight. I mean, it may not be a different fight, but I do think Matt will bring more to the table. But I just don't think he respected George, and George totally put it on his ass.
Yeah, well, we had Tim Sylvia on the program and asked him his thoughts about that fight, and that's essentially what he said, is not so much in regards to his training, but he just said it didn't look like the normal Matt Hughes was in there, that it didn't seem like he was really revved up as he should have been, and we all, of course, saw what happened. But
yeah, and everybody loses. He learned his lesson from that. Well, he probably should have learned from fighting BJ, but that was still a long time ago, and since he fought BJ, he beat BJ, and he beat, everybody else in his way.
Yeah.
So, and then you start to think that you're God sometimes, and you think you don't need to train as hard. You think you can just beat everybody because you've beaten all these other guys, and it doesn't work that way.
Dean, my last question for you before we let you out of here is your MySpace page, man. Is that your actual you're doing as far as is that a picture of your kid? Or there's like a bit about you could have Dean Thomas's seed or what?
No, I just want to see that picture's for the ladies. Know what I'm saying? I just want to let the ladies know that if you want one of the little ones like that, I'll go ahead and implant that. No strings attached. I'll go ahead and give you one. Just want the ladies to know, so if you're listening, I'll give you one.
Well, because I just thought I'd ask, because, sometimes MySpace pages aren't really for the, not done by the person that they claim to be done by, so we've got confirmation that that's your MySpace page.
That's my MySpace page. You know, that's my kid on there. That's my best friend too. I hang out. Me and him, we're partners, man. Anytime you see me in the daytime, he's with me, so we're partners.
All right. Well, very cool.
Yeah.
All right, Dean. Well, we appreciate coming on the show, and best of luck next week at the Ultimate Fight Night. Dean Thomas taking on.
Yeah, and I appreciate you guys, man. I appreciate it. And you make sure you get me on a post-fight interview, man. I won't sell you out this time, man. I promise.
All right, sounds good. All right, Dean. Take care, man.
All right, gentlemen. Y'all be cool.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Dean. See ya.
The best coverage of the toughest fighters in the toughest sport can only be found in Full Contact Fighter. For over a decade now, FCF has been bringing mixed martial arts fans across the globe in-depth reporting of the world's greatest sport. From Brazil, Japan, Europe, Canada, and the U.S., FCF brings you all the fighter bios, event reports, training and technique tips any avid MMA fan would want. Every month, 12 times a year, we do it. Full Contact Fighter is your best source for MMA coverage. Pick up the latest edition of the paper by subscribing at www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. Again, the number 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred, new source of the world. And when you call, tell them that FCF Radio sent you. Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and it was interesting, Brendan, to have the commissioner from the International Fight League on the program, Kurt Otto, and obviously you can hear from his perspective and point of view that last year, 2006, was a great year for the IFL, and clearly they have a lot of high hopes for 2007.
Yeah, I think you've got to argue that they have anyone increase their presence. People talk about the UFC as sort of busting open this new wave of MMA popularity, but really the IFL, I think, has brought a fair amount of innovation to the whole process. So it will be very interesting to see how this league blossoms this year with their first actual full season with so many teams.
Yeah, and one thing that we talked a little bit about with Kurt Otto was in regards to some of their super fights and that format. And like you mentioned, I think you had mentioned to him that a lot of them sort of feature veteran fighters and guys that have been around for a long time. And, of course, I think most people are excited about the Smith fight coming up and Matt Lindland and Carlos Newton. But also, I mean, and Jeremy Horn is another veteran you'd want to throw in there, but Robbie Lawler is going to be fighting in one of their upcoming super fights as well. So it'll be interesting to see how that feature of the IFL comes to fruition in the next year, I think. Outside of the team fights, if we actually start to see some younger fighters competing in these super fights as well.
Well, I like to see that. I like to see some younger fighters, and I'd also like to see those old guys, you know. And the unfortunate thing, I think, that the UFC tried to play on some of the old popularity of these fighters like Maurice Smith or Marcos Huas, but they, you know, to just basically build their young fighters. You know, you use these old guys as stepping stones. But if these guys are willing to strap it on and have at her, you know, who doesn't want to see Maurice Smith and Marcos Huas or some of the older Gracies fight? Or, you know, I'd love to see Baz in there as well.
Yeah,
and you know, fighting. Just to show, really, I think one of the interesting things about MMA is that unlike pro boxing or unlike professional baseball or professional football, you know, you can strap on a gi, you can strap on the pads and go and grapple or kickbox or do whatever you want and as old as you want. So, you know, some fat ass like myself can get off his couch at 35 and go start grappling and take some jiu-jitsu or judo or whatever and have fun doing it. So I think that's a really good demonstration. It's not necessarily a young guy's sport, and I think these old guys, it'll be interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see them compete.
Yeah, and the fight that I referred to with Robbie Lawler, he's going to be taking on Eduardo Pamploma, who's a tough Brazilian, 5-1 record, on their February 23rd card, so that's an interesting super fight. But just playing devil's advocate here for a second, Brendan, and I think everybody knows, if they listen to the show regularly, that certainly I have been, always was excited about some of these super fight matchups. And even the one between Marcos Huat and Maurice Smith, which is two fighters in their mid-40s, I'm excited to see it as well. But playing devil's advocate, what do you say, Brendan, then, to some of the critics? And I think Kurt Otto sort of tried to get into this a little bit. Just some of the critics that would say, look, you know, these are guys beyond their prime. them billed as a super fight, this by no means really compares to some of the top flight international fights you might see with, you know, Josh Barnett versus Fedor Emelianenko. Do you understand where those kind of criticisms are coming from?
Well, you know, I think a lot of those criticisms are just parroted from other professional sports. So once you turn a certain age, then you've lost a step, and if you lose a step in boxing, or if you're not just as quick, then you're overall a bad fighter. That's something you can't overcome. But MMA is a completely different sport, and, you know, I think, was it Miletic who made the comparison between boxing and MMA like checkers to chess, you know? There's lots of different ways to win, and lots of different skills and strategies you can fall back on. So, is it just because someone's 40 years old and fighting, does that make it necessarily a worse fight? No, I don't think so. You know, and this is, if anything, I think MMA at its worst is just someone with technique fending off someone with brute strength. And you can go a long way with brute strength, and you know, a lot of wrestlers have demonstrated that, but. Once all those variables are mitigated, then the skilled aspects of the sport come back out, and I think that's very interesting, and I think it will still be something very interesting to watch rather than, you know, two old farts leaning on one another in a boxing match that have been who are punched out. I think MMA, especially with guys of the caliber that the IFL has surrounding them, is still interesting at that age, and I look forward to it.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. The one thing, and there were so many things that we could have easily probably kept Kurt on the line there for quite some time. And there's so many issues I would have loved to discuss with him, but they're an extremely busy week for that organization. They've got two cards within the next couple of weeks, but we ran out of time, and I was hoping to maybe hear his thoughts about some possible expansion into Canada outside of just Toronto. And do you think, Brendan, realistically, is MMA there here in Canada? Do you think we could at some point possibly see, say, a team in Montreal or Vancouver or Edmonton or Calgary, for that matter?
Well, I think if they had a super heavyweight division, that would be a nice matchup against the Vancouver Double Losers and the Edmonton Grizzly Bears, me and you, 270,
yeah,
squaring off.
Right. No, but honestly, I mean, you think... For sure, I think there's without question Montreal. I would think would be able to have a team and have good support behind it. Probably more so than Toronto is really.
Yeah, I think Vancouver and Montreal would be the obvious hotspots. And Vancouver, there's a number of gyms out there that could certainly support a feed into the IFL, and a number of great caliber fighters. You know, that fight in the elite or fight in the MFA that could certainly step up and be competitive with almost anyone. And Montreal, you could say exactly the same thing. Mm-hmm. Two of the biggest organizations in Canada coming out of Montreal. So, yeah, there's no doubt. And like you say, I think Montreal was actually a better fit than would have been a better fit than Toronto.
Yeah.
In terms of just raw talent lying around, and people and a community that would support the fight scene.
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing. It's actually interesting because both Edmonton and Calgary have some great gyms and some great fight teams. But that's sort of the ironic thing in the situation here in Vancouver, where we have several. We've got Gibson's, we've got Team Revolution, we've got Marcus Suarez out here, who does a lot of training with different teams. Tim Shears, Cocoon. I mean, there's a lot of great schools out here, and I've probably just missed a couple off the top of my head just there. But then the ironic part about that is that Vancouver hasn't yet established itself in a fan arena that's similar to Edmonton or Calgary, who have had some fairly large crowds, 4,000 or 5,000 fans turn up for fights. And in Vancouver, so far, we haven't really got to that level yet. I guess with the Lost Bulldog show, we crept near that margin, but we're still a little bit behind, I'd say, Edmonton or Calgary as far as fan support goes.
Well, it's, you know, Vancouver is like it's like Mexico. It's tough to get people to do things when you want them to do. It's all of a sort of manana attitude. And I think there's more dope in Vancouver, so it's even harder to get people motivated to do things even when they want to do them. So, it's tough to get fans out for any sport there. And it's just not a sports town. And I don't say that in a critical way because, I live in a sports town and it's kind of annoying at times, but. That being said, I think there's definitely raw material for the
raw material for fighters as for the fans. I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, I think part of it is you just like slagging Vancouver because I live here. But
well, I like to take every opportunity. To
yeah,
share.
Yeah, and I think there'd be a lot of people that take issue with that. Is I mean, Vancouver's always been a hockey town first and foremost. As far as the popularity of hockey here is enormous. If you listen to sports radio out here, it's going to dominate 90% of the discussion, and then they'll throw in probably 10% towards the BC Lions CFL, and that's about it. But you don't really hear too much about other sports. But I get even that, in saying that, though, the Whitecaps soccer team have some support. But yeah, let's save that debate for another time, and hopefully you'll get some hate mail for those remarks.
I can't get any more hate mail. I have to buy my own web server, build my own web server to take any more hate mail. So, but the nice thing about people who hate you in Vancouver is they get over it very quickly.
And then the other thing I wanted to talk about was the upcoming UFC Fight Night, and I don't necessarily want to make our picks because that's next Thursday, so we should probably wait until next week. But when you break down that card and you look at some of the matchups on that card, Brendan, there's some really, really interesting ones.
Oh, I think it's going to be a great card. Yeah, I think they seem to be able to do no wrong with these live shows.
Yeah, and like we talked to Greg Jackson a little bit about two of the big fights, of course, Rashad Evans taking on Sean Salmon, and Dean Lister fighting Nate Marquardt. So those two we kind of discussed, but as well, you've got Ed Herman versus Chris Price, Clay Guida versus Dean Thomas, Spencer Fisher versus Hermes Franca. I mean, that fight has the potential to be just an unbelievable matchup.
Well, if you look at the card, basically there are it's almost good enough for, if they had a headliner in there, it's almost good enough for a pay-per-view, you know. Mm-hmm. And you can't argue, especially with the lineups they've got. And I don't know, I think the guys who are fighting on the undercard are going to have to really put in their a hard day's work to get on TV, because I think there's going to be stiff competition.
And the debut of Heath Herring, which I think is kind of, with the signings of Quinton Jackson and Crow Cop to the UFC, it's almost gone a little bit underneath the radar, I think. And Heath Herring's going to be fighting Jake O'Brien, who's an undefeated heavyweight at 9-0. And so it's going to be the Crazy Horse's debut in the UFC that night.
And it'll be interesting to see him, because we haven't seen him fight since there was the technical knockout during the handshake, and then before that, what was the last fight we saw him? I think we saw him fight Gary Goodrich, I guess it would have been, in K1, his first K1 fight after he left Pride. So it's a long time ago. That's a long time ago, and I'm sure he'll be looking forward to fighting again on American soil.
Yeah, I mean, I know when it was first announced that he was going to be coming over to the UFC, we definitely picked him as a contender in the UFC heavyweight division. Do you think it's at all possible we could see a Heath Herring Miracle Crow Cup rematch somewhere in 2007?
I think we'll see a Heath Herring Miracle Crow Cup title contention when Miracle is the champion and Herring is the contender. But I don't think we'll see it before that.
Yeah, and you were right as far as just pulling up his record on the Full Contact Fighter database. Yeah, his last fight was the knockout of Gary Goodrich at K1 Heroes last March, so he hasn't competed in a while.
Yeah, and it'll be nice to see if he can knock some ring rust off, and I think he'll be just, I think he's just what the doctor ordered in terms of rejuvenating the UFC heavyweight division, you know, and I think for the first time in a long time, it's not, it's a division that they can proudly build shows around very soon, rather than the dilemma that they found themselves in only a year ago.
And then a lot of the matchups have finally been announced for the World Extreme Cage Fighting card that's taking place on January 20th as well. And, you know, that, of course, we've talked about the fact that the UFC has bought the WEC that's going to be running as its own sort of continuing as is. But one can't help but wonder if it won't, in essence, be somewhat of a feeder card for the UFC, but they claim that they're going to be running it separately. But if you look at some of the matchups even on that card as well, there's some great fighters that you could see easily transitioning into the UFC if they put together some wins. And one of the most notable names is Carlos Condit fighting Kyle Jensen in a welterweight fight that night.
Well, I, it'll be interesting. Like you said, I think it'll be interesting to see what they do with that. And it would be nice to see the WEC developing a feel of its own, especially the promotion of lighter weight fighters. And if they do start a 145 division, I think that would be something very exciting to watch. So I'm not sure if they're going to want to have so much crossover. I think the nice thing is that they'll have the capacity to do so. You know, if a fight aligns itself and that it's a fight that's got to happen, you know, they can very easily just make it happen rather than entering into painful negotiations. So I think it'll be win-win. If the more separate they keep it, the better. I think the better it'll be for both organizations. But it will always be interesting to see maybe a unified champion between the two.
Yeah, and actually you touched on something there, which is really an interesting point, is in regards to the fact that the WC has a 145-pound division, and Uriah Faber is going to be taking on Joe Pearson for that organization's 145-pound title. And I think for most avid MMA fans, they're well familiar with Uriah Faber. He holds several different promotions belts, widely regarded as one of the best 145-pound fighters in North America, if not the world. So that's an interesting thing to consider, Brendan, is if you look at someone like Faber, if he starts to have some success in the WC or continued success in the WC, does the UFC start to think, well, here's a guy that maybe we can market? Does that help push along the drive for the 145-pound division in the UFC?
Mm-hmm. And I don't think it hurt him being on the CNBC documentary.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, and that was. Did you get to catch that?
No, I didn't. We don't have MSNBC out here, so.
Yeah, it was good. It was very good.
And then Kit Cope versus Razor Rob McCullough in the lightweight title fight. I think it's pretty safe to say that this is probably going to be a great stand-up war. Both guys very well accomplished kickboxing veterans, so that fight on its own should be fantastic.
I'm really looking forward to this fight, actually, and both of these guys are very high level Muay Thai kickboxers. You know, they're both tough as nails. And the interesting thing will be, what we heard about Razor Rob is that he's in the gym 24/7, trains like a madman, very serious, very devout in his training. And now Kit Cope has developed a little bit of a cult of personality, having some momentum coming off the MTV show and having his own show on Spike now. It'll be interesting to see whether or not Kit is taking this fight seriously and will come ready for a war. And if he can, I think it'll be a great fight.
And then Brian Gassaway is going to be fighting John Alessio, and I think this is a big opportunity for Alessio to try to get his career back in order. Not to say that it's fallen off the rails or anything, but he's come off the impressive performance against Diego Sanchez, and then the devastating loss, I think it's safe to say, against Thiago Alves. So for him to try to get back into some of the mainstream or bigger card fights, a win over Gassaway here would be pretty key, I would think.
I think it will. I think his career is certainly not off the rails, but I think he certainly has some making up to do for his last year. He certainly had a disappointing 2006, so it'll be very interesting to see where Alessio goes from here and whether or not he can turn it around. You know, he's another guy with tons of potential, and that's one of the things that's always said about him. And I feel for him, having come home with the same report cards all throughout my life. A lot of unfulfilled potential. So
the last thing I wanted to touch on, and I know you're not a big gamer like I am, but it was announced today on the UFC website that they've signed a deal with THQ, which is a pretty well-known video game production company. And I think this is I think some people might roll their eyes right now that aren't into video games, Brendan, but I think this does truly reflect, I mean, the UFC's had games in the past, but if you look at the status of the UFC now, this could seriously be a huge income stream for them. If they come out with a hit game and look at how popular the sport is, especially in that demographic between 18 and 34-year-olds, this is no joke. I mean, this could mean millions and millions of dollars for them.
Well, there's no doubt about that. And I think one of the new and innovative things will be apparently there's going to be a massive online component as well. So, you know, you could be fighting someone, literally pulling your hair out of your head. fight you repeatedly online, and there's nothing more, you know, nothing more frustrating than that. And I am a gamer. It's just that, you know, I'm a gamer of the old school, so I have problem coming to terms with any game that uses more than one, or sometimes possibly two buttons. So.
Well, as a child of the '60s, I understand that your technology skills are quite lacking.
It was all downhill from Pong, buddy.
Yeah. But, I mean, I think, and this is probably revealing a little bit of my nerdier side, but I'm excited about it just because I had the old Pride game for PlayStation 2, and it was okay, but I mean, it was one of those games that wasn't very realistic, some of the moves on the ground. And we had Rory Markham on the program, too. We talked about this briefly. And, and then you had the UFC Tap Out series, which basically had the same fighting engine as the Pride game. And I believe, I could be mistaken on this, but I don't think there's been a new mixed martial arts video game since 2002 or 2003. And I love the Fight Night series with EA. That's a great boxing game. And they've really revved up. I mean, it's unbelievable some of the techniques you can do on the standing, from the standing aspect of fighting in that boxing game. So I'm really excited, Brennan, to see what the last 3, 4, 5 years, what THQ is going to be able to do with advancements in technology and advance in game planning, to see how realistic it's going to be, because as we all know, mixed martial arts is such a complicated sport, it's hard to envision a game that has real portrayals of submissions and reversals and escapes, etc.
I think if anything, the console games and PC games have gone as erred on the side too much of realism and have lacked on the side of gameplay, and I think they've got to make a game that's fun to play, and you know, you base it loosely around those themes, but you know, the realism is second place. They got to find out a way to make an MMA game that's really fun to play and catchy.
See, I don't know, man. I think you're reflecting the fact that you're old school gamer right there, to be honest. No, honestly, and I think the reason is some of the big criticisms of older games was the fact that, you know, you had to punch a guy a million times before you could take him out, and some of the, like, the submissions, etc., in the Pride or Tap Out games weren't very realistic. So I think fans are craving that, because if you look at football games and hockey games, etc., the level of realism now is so high that I think most gamers do crave that realism almost more so than just... I think in order for the game to be fun for gamers nowadays, it has to be extremely realistic.
Well, I think that, you know, the fundamental difference between you and I is not of generations, but of mindsets and the types of video games we like to play. So I come from the old school arcade tradition where you can actually play a game and get it over with in half an hour. You know, Duke Nukem being the extent of my attention span. And then you like to play games that actually emulate your real life, so you have to actually go to game university for 4 years to learn how to play it, and then it basically live it out minute for minute, corresponding to one's real time world. So I just don't have the time or patience for recreating my own world in which to game. I like one to be provided for me, one or at most two buttons.
So Brennan, have a good day tomorrow, and we'll talk to you later in the week.
You as well.
Okay, take care.
Bye.